Nevada Governor Brian Sandoval, a centrist Republican, announced today that he was removing himself from consideration as President Obama's next nominee to the U.S. Supreme Court. Sandoval's name was being floated today, even as Senate Republicans have said they will refuse to hold hearings on any nominee.
Joining us now to break down the latest news is political science professor Kimmy King of the University of North Texas. Kimmy, welcome back to Central Time.
Good to be back, everybody. Remember, if you're listening, support public radio.
Thank you so much. Well, let's look at this concept here that's being floated of a Republican generally regarded as a guy who can work across the aisle, I guess. This could be anything from, let's kind of troll the Republicans from the White House. Let's see if they'd bite at this idea of Republican, to a serious thought that, yeah, they really would nominate this governor, this Republican governor. How do you read this, Kimmy?
So part of what it is throwing the initial challenge out there to the Republicans to make it clear that President Obama is going to continue to think outside the box and try to throw them off balance. And so there's a real question of how sincere it really is. I mean, recognize that he is not done with his term as Nevada governor until 2019. So it's also kind of an interesting way to remove a Republican governor out and open that up for a special election. The larger issue is the extent to which Republicans take Sandoval to the woodshed and say, we need to make ourselves very clear that if you want to think about what your political aspirations will be, and if any of them involve elected office, you are going to need us on your side. So it really poses an interesting counter challenge, and it puts in the limelight this concern that Obama is saying that this is an obstructionist Senate, and it forces the Republicans to have to make the next move in this critical chess game.
Well, Governor Sandoval was pretty quick to say thanks, but no thanks, not interested, happy with my gig here as governor. But this concept, and most of our Supreme Court justices lately are coming from the court system. This is a guy who has been a judge, but he's a sitting governor. And I imagine in a confirmation hearing, that would give a lot of things for both sides to look at, because he, as opposed to a judge who can say, oh, I'm just reading the cases, I'm just ruling on this, he has a lot of stuff, or somebody from a similar position would have a lot of actual policy decisions on their record.
Yes, although it's interesting because, remember, O'Connor had political experience in the Arizona legislature, and that made her a little savvy as she headed on to the bench. But there were those who were critical of her. I would say your best bet for where President Obama is going to go with this is he's going to go with someone who's tried and true off of probably the Court of Appeals. He'll be looking for somebody in the not-so-distant past, because you don't want him to have so much of a record that someone could go after then. There'll be somebody out of the Court of Appeals who is a moderate, who would be an interesting choice that makes everybody kind of go, now what about that one? And that's why everybody's floating the name of Sri Srinivasan. I'm just going to destroy that name. Sri Srinivasan, who's a member of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, Scalia's old stomping ground. He was already nominated and put forward and confirmed back in 2013, so he has enough of a record. And most importantly, Cruz and Rubio voted for him.
Looking at what we're hearing from Senate Republicans, Mitch McConnell and others saying, we're not going to have a confirmation hearing, we're not going to have a committee hearing, we're not going to meet with your nominee no matter who it is. You can reincarnate the best qualities of everyone who's ever been in the Supreme Court, nominate them, we're not meeting with them. If I'm hearing that and I'm a potential nominee, am I really going to want to take this? Am I going to want to be in this weird position of basically limbo? Who would want this nomination?
Well, absolutely, and that may be part of the fear, but at the same time, remember, you're one of only 124 individuals in history who has the ability to live on well beyond your time and leave a legacy. And that's why this is so important. In some ways, this is more high stakes than the election of the next president. Remember, the average age of a Supreme Court justice is somewhere around 79 right now, and so it has become a tradition of serving at least 25 years on the court after having been nominated. And so even just the possibility of it is something that a number of people would take quite seriously. Maybe not now, but maybe later.
That reminds me, just earlier this week, we heard from someone with a group who said, hey, we need to change things. We need term limits, 18-year terms for Supreme Court justices. Because of that, there are longer lifespans, justices serving 20, 30 years. Do you think that, I know it's probably a long shot that it would happen, but if it were to happen, do you think that would lower some of the stakes on these nominations?
It might. The first thing you're going to have to do, though, is go back and amend the Constitution, because it was always intended that they serve for life, and they can't even have their salary reduced. So when, like, the income tax came on way back in the early 1900s, the Supreme Court justices didn't have to pay taxes because that would have lowered their salary. I mean, we've always held Supreme Court justices in this very hallowed position. We call it the myth of the robe, right? That you look at these folks as being very wise. So perhaps that's a possibility for term limits, but you know what? Gosh, if we can't even get term limits on members of Congress, I'm not really sure how people are going to feel about the Supreme Court, because certainly people would have loved to have had Scalia be on until the end of time.
We're talking to Kimmy King, professor of political science at the University of North Texas, about the latest in the effort to find a new U.S. Supreme Court justice. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Should the president nominate someone? Who should it be? Should the Senate hold a hearing? Should they confirm? Should this all wait for the next president?
We're continuing our discussion about Supreme Court politics with Kimmy King. She's a professor of political science at the University of North Texas.
You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Should President Obama make a nomination, or should President fill-in-the-blank make their nomination when they come into office next January? Should the Senate pay attention if the president makes a nomination? Should they consider whoever he nominates and give it an up or down vote? And who's on your short list? Any names you want to name? Call 800-642-1234. Kimmy, do you see this becoming an issue in the presidential race if the standoff keeps standoffing?
It already is an issue in the presidential race. I mean, I think that it's maybe the most interesting issue at the moment. Part of what it is that we are in the middle of one of the most contentious presidential elections in history, and now we've thrown another branch of government into that controversy, and it fundamentally addresses this question of what is the position of the American people about the direction you want the country to take? Do you want it to be politics as usual, or are you ready to take on some kind of change? And if you are, what does that change look like? Does that change look like a Trump? Does it look like a Cruz? Does it look like a Sanders? Does it look like a Supreme Court justice that's a Republican, that's the only way that justice can get through? And so I think that's why everyone is so tapped into this.
You mentioned that almost mythical status of the Supreme Court. Is that diminished when it's the kind of political football it's been, especially since, I don't know, the 1980s or so?
You know, everybody talks about the fact that Supreme Court nominations have been controversial, but the reality is judicial nominations go back to controversy, to Marbury versus Madison in 1803. I mean, it's the stuff you learned about in high school. In that particular case, you had an incoming president, Jefferson, who refused to sign off on a commission done by Adams, who was the outgoing president. You had the last-minute appointment himself of Chief Justice John Marshall, who was supposed to get the appointments done. He himself had been a last-minute appointment. And as a consequence, the reason why we have judicial review in the first place out of the courts is over a nomination battle. So it has always been the case that this stuff has been messy. Has it been uglier than usual since the 1980s? Absolutely. But that actually really goes back to 1968 and the nomination of Abe Fortas. So we can really take it back even a little bit further than the 1980s.
Let's bring in a caller now. We've got Sonia on the line in Cleveland. Sonia, hi. Sonia?
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
I just think that the Supreme Court should have that person nominated as soon as possible, because the Constitution requires that they have 9
All right, Sonia, thanks for calling in. Kimmy, first of all, does the Constitution specify the number of Supreme Court justices?
Actually, it doesn't. The number of justices has ranged over time. Congress gets to set, in essence, the jurisdiction of the court, and so they can add on additional federal courts, but there's nothing magical about that number 9. We've been at 5, we've been 6, we were 9, we were up to 10 right after the Civil War, back to 9, and then people, you know, grandparents may recall that during the New Deal, Franklin Delano Roosevelt tried to pack the court with an additional 6 justices because he was unhappy about the rulings that the court was issuing. So there's not really anything magical about it, but it is critical this term. Of all the terms that this could have happened, you have cases on the docket where Scalia's vote made a difference. And so in the abortion case out of Texas, it probably doesn't make a difference in that particular case. I'll be curious to see the direction the court takes it there. Kennedy's the swing voter. But we have an issue regarding health care and whether religious nonprofits, including charities, have to have a contraceptive mandate. The unions have a fair share fee that's being considered. Affirmative action is back on the court's docket, and it hopefully this term was thought to be resolved, and now that's been thrown into the air. They have religious schools that are supposed to be thinking that they can start being eligible for publicly funded grants. That case is now up in the air. Climate change, immigration. I mean, do you want me to go on?
Well, actually, we've got a caller, I think, Kimmy, who wants to bring up one more possibility. Jill is with us in New Berlin. Hi, Jill.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. My main question is, what would happen in the event of a contested election like we had in Gore with the recount in Florida? If there was a contested election, it came to the Supreme Court, or if there was voter fraud alleged or something like that. And
Jill, I want to jump in and bring Kimmy on because we're almost done. What if Bush versus Gore was 4-4? No,
wow.
Tying vote, no tiebreaker.
That is just such a great point on the part of your caller. I mean, yeah, absolutely. And that's part of the imperative for moving this forward. I mean, the question becomes, how long do you wait? Remember, you don't automatically become a Supreme Court justice after you're nominated. Scalia's own nomination himself took almost 3 months. And that was in, you know, not an ugly partisan environment like we have here. I mean, you could have indefinite delays as a result of something like that if you had a contested election again. So, excellent point.
A chilling vision of things to come. Kimmy, thanks for joining us today.
Take it easy. Support public radio.
Thanks. That's political science professor Kimmy King from the University of North Texas talking to us about the Supreme Court vacancy. What happens next? This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, in for Veronica Rickert. If you've ever found yourself thinking, there should be a word for that, or searching for the perfect word to describe something unique, our next guest can help.
We're talking about things like the smell after a rainstorm, or a shortcut that turns out to take longer than the original route. Is there just one word that sums either of those up? Maybe so. You can join in, by the way, at 800-642-1234. If you have a word for something unique, maybe a word you made up yourself, or if you think there should be a word and need some help finding it, call now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Martha Barnett joins us now. She's co-host of Away with Words, which you can hear on Sunday mornings at 9 right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Martha, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, thanks so much. I'm as happy as a kitten under a leaky cow to be here.
Well, that sounds pretty happy, and we're pretty happy to have you too. Before we get into some specific words, how often would you say do we run into this gap where we want there to be a word, but it's obscure or doesn't exist at all?
Oh my gosh. I have to tell you that, you know, we get hundreds of emails and phone calls a week on Away with Words, and a whole lot of them are people who are looking for that right word or wondering if there's a word for this or that. And I love these questions because it's sort of this This human hunger for imposing order on the world, you know, it's like language, a lot of language is about making sense of what we see and telling ourselves what we notice. And the really cool thing about finding a word like this is realizing somebody else has had that experience, that we are connected to each other.
And how...
we're not the only ones. So we get this question an awful lot. And, you know, you can just hear people relax when they realize there actually is a word for some weird thing.
Martha, how often is there that real word? How often is there actually something out there that meets their needs? And how often do we just strike out? There isn't one there.
If you know how to root around in the dictionary, which is what I do a whole lot, or you know Greek and Latin roots, there are a lot more times than not when we do find words for that.
And so would you say that a lot of people make words up? Because, Rob, just today, we are pretty sure made up the word frippery.
Frippery. Okay, now let me guess what that is. Frippery. It sounds like something that's sort of frivolous and puffery and just like an extra that you don't really need. That would be my guess.
Sort of. I was going for ornamentation or decoration,
okay.
But yeah, it's sort of a joking sense, I guess. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I made that up, though. Yeah,
frippery. It works for me. If it connotes meaning, if it carries meaning, it's a word. So maybe we can popularize it.
So let's talk about some of those words that describe those really unique experiences, sensations, situations. One is the way it smells outside after a long-awaited rain. And because I am friends with some scientists, I first of all know that there is a word and have a vague idea of what it is, but can't remember exactly. What is that word?
Excellent. Well, very good. Yes, it was invented by a couple of Australian scientists back in 1964. And this word for how it smells outside after a rain, especially after a long dry spell, is petrichor or petrichor. That's P-E-T-R-I-C-H-O-R.
And I want to give a shout out to our producer Halima, who actually knew that.
Wow.
Halima is raising her hand, huh?
Yes.
And does she know where it comes from? Does she know the roots of it? I wonder.
Because she's shaking her head. No.
Okay. Well, let me just tell you, so you can remember petrichor or petrichor. You can pronounce it either way. The petra there is from the Greek word for stone. It's the same word you see in petrify or in the Spanish word piedra, which means stone. And the ichor there is defined in Greek mythology as the ethereal fluid that serves for blood in the veins of gods. So it's this fluid that comes from stones metaphorically. But I think that your scientist friends will tell you that it has something to do with a chemical reaction that involves stones, and that's why you get that just delicious smell after a rain.
Now, you had sent us a list of words that meet this category, the words that people want there to be, and in some cases there is one, some cases they made it up. Another one on your list was a shortcut that actually takes longer than expected. So there is a word, or somebody came up with one for that?
Well, both, actually. I mean, haven't we all had this experience of thinking
yeah.
that we're going to outsmart Google Maps or we're in the grocery and decide that's the right checkout lane to get in, and then you're in there for much longer than you ever expected. There is actually a word that you can find in the Oxford English Dictionary for this, although I've always called it a long cut as opposed to it. Do you call it that?
I mean, that's what I thought of when I saw that on your list.
Yeah, some people actually call it a long paste, the opposite of short and cut, a long paste. But there actually is a word in the Oxford English Dictionary, which is circumbendibus.
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 So it's like you're circumventing something, the good way to go.
Exactly.
yeah, but with a B rather than a V. Oh. And it's just sort of a fanciful, made-up word that comes, I think, from the 17th century. But it's one of those words that sounds sort of Latin and official, but isn't really. But, you know, if you're late for a party or something, I think it can help to say, well, I took a circumbendibus, and then people ask why you're late, right?
Well, Martha, we have Michael from Oconomowoc on the line. Let's have him join the conversation. Hi, Michael.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Hi, Michael.
Good. So several years ago, I heard an interview on NPR from somebody who had read the entire dictionary, and one word that he described was the word describing the waves lapping against the beach.
So that sound.
And I always thought that was a very romantic thing, and it's been bothering me for 3 or 4 years because I can't remember what the word is now.
Oh, thank you very much, Mike. That was probably Ammon Shea who wrote the book on that. And, well, I can think of undulation, but that comes from the Latin word for wave. You know what? I could probably dig around here and see what I could come up with.
So, Michael, it's specifically the sound of the waves, right?
Yeah, the sound of the waves. You know, it's just a really calming kind of dispersion of water against sand.
Well, Michael, thanks a lot. And I'll tell you what, Martha, how about shoot me an email later and we'll get that up on the Central Time Facebook page.
Okay.
I don't want to have you on the spot now. And yeah. I want to get some more. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, well, I was going to say susurration is the word for the wind in the pines, but it's not that, right?
No, it's not that.
Okay.
But that's a nice word, too.
Yeah, from the Latin word for whisper. Boy, I'm really intrigued. I'll have to look up Ammon's book and see if I can find it.
All right, thank you so much for bringing that one up, Michael. Here's another one from your list, Martha. The last bite of food, this happens at WPR, the last bite of food on a plate that you leave to be polite. In WPR terms, that's going to be the half of a half of a half of a donut because you didn't want to take the last bit of donut.
Because we're polite Midwesterners.
Yeah.
And your public radio people.
Hence the donut, yeah.
Yeah, and so it actually stays there? It actually gets left?
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah.
Yes, and why is that?
Because nobody wants to be the person who took the last thing. I mean, people are getting here with, like, lasers leaving a subatomic donut particle, quark or something, because they don't want to take the last remnant. So there's a word for leaving that last bit of food, though.
Right. It just gets smaller and smaller. It's like evening up the brownies, right?
Yeah.
By continuing to eat them. Yeah. In English, the word is manners bit or
manners bit.
Piece. And it refers exactly as you're suggesting to the idea of manners. In Spanish, the word is vergüenza, which means shame. And it's sort of the same idea. You know, nobody wants to be caught having that last little vergüenza.
Maybe we can we create a new word right now, Martha? Can we call it a polite bite?
Yes.
Grab's not buying it.
I love that.
That's
I love
a phrase.
That. I am going to borrow that and use it on our show
if
you don't mind. The polite bite. That's much better than manners bit.
Love it.
See, manners bit is two words.
Manners bit. That does sound very British, though.
It does sound very Downton Abbey. It's time to
Lord
bomb,
Manners
right?
bit. Lord Manners bit has arrived.
So there's a word in Norwegian, and I do not speak Norwegian, but when visiting there, I was described by a Norwegian person to the friend I was visiting as being very kushly. And kushly means cozy, but it can be a person. Like, it's about a person being very warm and nice to be around. They're a cozy person. And I wish there was a word in English for that.
I love that. Kushly.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've talked about that before. I wouldn't call a person cozy,
right,
though, in English, would I,
right,
Martha?
Well, it depends on who the person is, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it depends, I would think. But kushly is very nice, so that's an affectionate term that you might use for a sweetheart or something.
Right, yeah. or just someone who's really nice to be around. It's a compliment.
Oh, nice. I'm borrowing that, too. Picking things up like a little magpie here.
I want to hit one more from your list, Martha, before we get back to the pledge drive at a couple. When you run into an old friend you haven't seen in decades and within minutes they seem like their younger selves. This may be from a TV show I've seen. What's the word you had for that one?
Oh, really? This was actually a call that we got from a woman who was talking about how she had run into a friend and she said, you know, they had been apart for all these years, but within just a few minutes, the spirit and the twinkle of her personality started coming through, and she was looking for a word for that. And I'm not sure that there is one, but I suggested, how about deja vu?
Oh, okay. That isn't what I thought. Deja vu is good. I'm on the show How I Met Your Mother. They have the concept of, they call it revertigo, when you revert back to what you were like 20 years ago when you knew that person.
Revertigo. That is great. That is great. This is what I love about doing public radio, is I learn so much from everybody else. Revertigo. I like that even better than deja vu. Thank you.
Well, Martha, that's all the time we have. We got through some of your list. I hope we'll have you back on and talk about some more.
Sounds like fun. Good luck.
That's Martha Barnett. She's co-host of Away with Words. You can hear the show Sunday mornings at 9 here on the Ideas Network.